This is obviously Independence Day weekend, and naturally all of the stuff on the radio was talking about liberty. And of course, I was listening to Ron Dart, and he was. And he said some stuff that has made me rethink the parable of the weeds. So I'm going to mostly talk about the parable of the weeds, but in order to get there, I need to do some other stuff. So Ron Dart was quoting Oz Hillman, and this was about 10 years ago, and he was talking about liberty, obviously, since this is the Independence Day. And Hillman said that liberty requires a triad. The first thing it requires is virtue or character. Character requires faith. Faith requires liberty. And that's circular. It just keeps going around and around and around. Now, let me explain those things. What Hillman said, and I completely agree with, is law is not capable of forming character. Law can tell you what to do and what not to do, but it can't form character. And of course, our Constitution, when it was set up, I think it was John Adams, said that the Constitution is completely inadequate to restrain a people who is not moral and virtuous, or words to that effect. So the society that was set up by us and the society that was set up in Israel by God depended on the virtue of the people for its success. It wasn't the laws that made us successful, it was our virtue. And what the laws do is inform and train virtue. So the laws tell you what a virtuous person looks like, but it depends on you to become virtuous in order for it to work. The thing that informs virtue is faith. Your natural inclination is just to do whatever the heck you want to do, bend everything to your will and so forth. And the thing that prevents you from doing that is faith. Because God, who gave us the Torah, says, this is really how you should behave. And if you believe God, then you look at the Torah as instructions on how you should behave, and you behave that way because of internal virtue, not because of external coercion. My favorite example, traffic laws. If everybody had a state cop riding in the front seat with them, you would obey every traffic law to the letter. But nobody does have such a thing. So we obey the traffic laws because we understand that they are for the good of everybody and the safety of everybody. And it is virtuous to obey the traffic laws. The flow of traffic depends on that virtue. Because there aren't enough state cops to ride in every car and make sure that everybody obeys the law. The law depends on virtuous people obeying it. And in order to have faith, in other words, to exercise faith, you have to have liberty. You can't be coerced into faith. Faith is something that is between you and God, and in order to exercise that, you have liberty. So you have this circle, if you will, that defines a good society. And in that sense, Torah becomes teaching, not law. Because what Torah is doing is it teaches us what God's vision of a good society is. And since He created us, He knows. And He knows what works and He knows what doesn't work. So He gave us the Torah so that we could follow it, increase our virtue and our character, and in that process, create a good, healthy society. Now, I'm going to give you about 25 words or less of the parable of the sower and then the parable of the weeds, and then we'll go on. First off, the parables in Matthew 13. Seven kingdom parables correlate with the seven letters to the seven churches in Revelation, and they also correlate with the seven pastoral letters that Paul wrote. So Paul wrote to seven churches pastoral letters, and all three of those sets of seven correlate. So I'm going to be bouncing around among those seven. First off is the kingdom of heaven is not in heaven. The kingdom of heaven is supposed to be here because the parables talk about pathologies in the kingdom of heaven. And theoretically, one hopes that when we get to actual new heaven and new earth, those pathologies will be gone. So the only thing we're talking about is here on earth. The kingdom of heaven is on earth. So the parable of the sower, seed is the word, which is information. And there's three problems. And they all begin with S, so you can remember them. Satan steals the word. That's the word that's sown on the street, right? Satan steals it. Society doesn't train the individual, so the individual has no depth of soil himself. So when the word is sown, he says, wow, that's really great. But he has no background for it, so it doesn't last. And then the self is the soil that falls among the weeds, and there you are more interested in what's going on in the world than you are in the word, and so the cares of this world choke it out. Satan, society, and self are the problems. And then, of course, the fourth soil is good soil, which brings forth a crop. In preparation for this, about 5 years ago, my son Matthew gave a sermon on the parable of the weeds. And one of the things he says is, I really like getting out in the garden and weeding and so forth. It really gives me a sense of, I wish I had known that when he was a teenager. Missed an opportunity there. But one of the things he said, which is absolutely correct, is weeding is never done. As you go out and you weed, you pull all the weeds out and you got this beautiful patch of weed-free ground, you turn around and go into the house and you come back out and weeds are starting to sprout again. There is no permanent victory over weeds. First thing to understand is there is no permanent victory over here. This is an ongoing, continuing struggle in this world. Parable of the weeds correlates with the letter in Revelation to the church at Smyrna, and it correlates with the letter to the Philippians. So what are weeds? Well, the obvious definition is a weed is any plant that grows where you don't want it to. For example, dandelions. Do you know that dandelions were deliberately brought to the New World? They're not native here. And the reason they were brought is because they are so useful. Every part of the dandelion is edible. It's useful for medicinal purposes. You can make salads out of it. You can make wine out of it. You can grind up the roots for a coffee substitute. It's a wonderful plant. It is also mean, nasty, and aggressive and will shove everything else out of the way. So when you get dandelions in your lawn, this wonderful, beautiful, useful plant just outcompetes the grass. And so you have a yard that looks like my yard, which has got lots of weeds. So dandelions are a mixed blessing, if you will. They're wonderful and useful, but they're also invasive and a nuisance. In the parable of the weeds, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field, but while his men were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat and went away. All right, the weed that is probably sown there is darnel. And darnel looks just exactly like wheat until it forms a seed stalk. You can't tell the difference between darnel and wheat until you get grain heads. Darnel's grain heads are black, whereas wheat, of course, when it dries, is brown. So it's only at the harvest that you can tell the difference between the darnel and the wheat. The thing about darnel, however, is it is toxic. Unlike the dandelion, which is wonderfully useful, darnel is completely toxic. And if you eat darnel, and people have, you wind up getting hallucinations and mental problems and all sorts of stuff. It is literally a really bad thing to have darnel in your wheat. And you can't tell the difference until they finally get to the point where you're ready to reap. And then you look at the darnel, ah, that's black. Wheat is golden color. So what we're talking about in the parable of the weeds and in the letter for Smyrna, and let me read Revelation 2:8. To the angel of the church at Smyrna write, the words of the first and the last who died and came to life. I know your tribulation and your poverty, but you are rich. And the slander of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. So what we're talking about in Revelation here is toxic weeds in the church. That's the whole thing. Now, as I say, I have come to rethink this since Friday when I was listening to Ron Dart. The obvious meaning of that, which is what I've always heard and always thought, is you're going to have persecution within the church. And that's true. Nothing wrong with that. But I think there's a more subtle and more difficult problem that I had never really thought about. Come back again now to weeds, seeds. Seeds are nothing but information. Yeshua says that in the parable of the sower, where he says, the seed is the word, information. Hey, ding, 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 that's what we're talking about here. A seed is just a thumb drive that carries information. You stick it in the ground and it's got all the information you need to make an oak tree or whatever kind of seed it is. So certainly the weeds growing up within the church persecute within the church. And that's the whole point of Revelation 2, the church at Smyrna, actual persecution. But the other thing that the weeds do is they bring false information into the church. So in addition to persecution, what you have is bad information. And having been in the church for a little bit, I have always thought that that bad information is something that will keep you from going to heaven. In other words, if you believe the wrong thing about God, then you lose your salvation, and there's lots of churches that believe that. I don't think that's the problem. What I think the problem is the bad information corrupts character. Remember, I said at the beginning, you have this triad that Ron Dart was talking about. Liberty requires character or virtue. So if you corrupt character, what you wind up doing then is you wind up going into slavery eventually. And what I will suggest to you is that the corruption of character here in the United States is the thing that is leading us to have this government that has grown like kudzu and has become an actual menace to us. It's a character problem among us, the people. We have believed bad information, which is to say, the weeds that have been sown in the field have brought with them bad information, which leads to bad character. Now, it may also be far more insidious than that. It may be bad information that leads off to heresies and other stuff like that. That's also part of it. But the thing that is really more insidious is the character problem. Let me take you to Philippians. Remember I said the letter to the church at Philippi correlates with the parable of the weeds. So Philippians 3. Verse 8, indeed, I count everything as loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Yeshua as my Lord. For his sake, I have suffered the loss of all things and count them as rubbish, in order that I may gain Christ and be found in him, not having a righteousness of my own that comes from the law, but that which comes through faith in Christ, the righteousness from God that depends on faith. Remember the little triad I started off with? The idea here is Paul has internalized the law and now behaves according to the law because that is the virtuous thing for him to do, as opposed to because somebody is going to nail him if he doesn't. It's the first thing. Now, down to verse 17. Brothers, join in imitating me and keep your eyes on those who walk according to the example you have in us. In other words, I have given you an example. Follow that. For many of whom I have often told you, and now tell you even with tears, walk as enemies of the cross of Christ. These are the weeds, synagogue of Satan. Their end is destruction, their God is their belly, and they glory in their shame with mind set on earthly things. Now what that is saying is these people are ruled by their appetite. And it says the God is their belly, obviously food, but it's really a metaphor for appetite. And it can be appetite for power, appetite for improper sex, appetite for whatever. So their God is their belly, which is to say they are focused entirely on their appetites. And their end is destruction, and they glory in their shame, which is to say they do stuff that Torah says they should not do, and they glory in it, which is to say they proselytize. They're weeds, they're in the church, they're doing stuff that shouldn't be done, and they are proud of it. What I would call that is false virtue. They have made a virtue of something that God hates, that is wrong in Torah. And what they do then is they corrupt the character of everybody around them by pushing this false virtue. Look at our society. Are we awash in false virtue? I would say yes, we are. We've just finished a month of pride, which is something God hates, in something that God says don't do. That's a false virtue. And you have the people who are pushing that false virtue. It's infiltrated the church, and you have churches who are preaching false virtue, which is to say bad character, and bad character leads to slavery. That's what is being talked about here. Now, remember I said weeds will never be permanently eradicated. So you find out you got a weed in the church, and you say, we would just as soon you not fellowship here, go away. Well, there are no permanent victories over the weeds. There's always going to be more weeds sprouting up. Weeds are two things. One is they are a test of character. So the question is, can you recognize that this is a weed? And the second thing is they develop character, because what you have to do is you have to resist them and you have to push back. And in that process, you get stronger. One of the reasons that God says in the parable of the weeds to his servants, no, don't go out there and pull these weeds before the harvest. Two things. Thing one is in that process, stomping around in my field, pulling the darnel, you're going to stomp on some wheat. And the wheat to me is valuable, and I don't want you to do that. But thing number two is competing against the weeds. Remember, dandelions are fierce competitors. We should be too. We should recognize the weeds in our society, and we should push back against them because they are destroying liberty eventually. Let me give you some examples here. I'm going to go to Colossians. Colossians 2, verse 8. See that no one takes you captive by philosophy and empty deceit, according to human tradition and according to the elemental spirits of the world, and not according to Christ. So the first thing there is any idea that comes into the church from the world does not come in peace. Ideas that come into the church from the world come to conquer. Down to verse 16, Colossians 2. Therefore, let no one pass judgment on you in questions of food and drink, or with regard to a festival, or a new moon, or a Sabbath. These are a shadow of the things to come, but the substance belongs to Christ. What we're talking about there, you've all been messianics for a while. When you quit doing Christmas and Easter, did you catch flack from your family? That's what he's talking about here. You guys have started doing Torah. You're going to catch flack from the pagans you used to live among because you're not doing Saturnalia and whatever else. That's what it's saying. Let no one disqualify you insisting on asceticism and worship of angels, going on in detail about visions puffed up without reason by a sensuous mind. Sensuous mind, your God is your belly, appetite, and not holding fast to the head from whom the whole body, nourished and knit together through its joints and ligaments, grows with a growing that is from God. If with Christ you died to the elemental spirits of the world, why, as if you were still alive in the world, do you submit to regulations? Do not handle, do not taste, do not touch, referring to things that all perish as they are used, according to human precepts and teachings. In other words, these are false teachings within the church. Weeds. God has told you what you should handle, what you shouldn't handle. God has told you what you should eat, what you shouldn't eat. God has given you all that information in the Torah. When I was an Episcopalian, we used to have an annual pig roast. We'd go out and farm, get a pig, get a rooster like one of those we had, and we'd have a pig roast. God says, don't eat that stuff. I didn't know any better. But when I quit that, one of the things you get from your former friends is, what's wrong with you? Why won't you do that? And that's what Paul is talking about here. Christian converts coming to Torah who are getting flack from their community because they're acting weird. They aren't doing this stuff. They're not celebrating Christmas. They're not eating pork, and they're getting flack from people around them. That's what Paul is talking about. The whole point here is the weeds push this as false virtue. Pushing all of these things, they say, this is virtuous. You want to behave this way? Well, no, you don't. And what Torah does is it tells you what virtue looks like, and the world will try and take you off of that. So, what Torah is teaching, and what it does is enables you to identify weeds. So whenever you get something, anything, to include inside the church, to include coming out of my mouth, check it against Torah and see if it's a weed or it's not. And don't get me wrong, there's a whole bunch of stuff that isn't weeds and it isn't Torah either. Perfectly good stuff, there's no problem with it. You don't have to go around with a magnifying glass looking at everything, you don't have to walk in fear. But understand what the Torah is. It is your botany guide to identify what a weed is. And there's lots of stuff that are plants that are not weeds. They're not food, they're just beautiful plants. Nothing wrong with any of that. But you need to learn to identify weeds, and that's what the Torah is for.